Coming up on Tech News Today, Samsung's making a smartwatch. HTC can't get parts for the One. And Google wants to unify all their chats. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, March 19th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile by Citrix. Try ShareFile today. For a 30-day free trial, go to ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter TNT. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, and now an online store. Check out their new commerce solution so you can start selling stuff immediately. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT3. And by Pond5, the world's stock media marketplace. If you're a media maker looking for video, photos, illustrations, music, sound effects, After Effects templates, or 3D models, check out Pond5. And for an exclusive 50 free stock media files, go to pond5.com/TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show we keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, starting each time with the top 10 of the day in the news feed. Samsung's working on a wristwatch. It's not a rumor or a leak. It's straight from the mouth of Lee Young-hee, executive vice president of Samsung's mobile business. Lee told Bloomberg, "We've been preparing the watch product for so long. We are working very hard to get ready for it." Lee gave no other details about the watch. Apple's been rumored to have 100 developers working on a watch of their own, but Apple has not given any official word.
HTC's flagship phone, the HTC One, has been delayed to late March or early April in some markets because of issues with its supply chain. And what executives say is HTC no longer being regarded as a tier one company, which is not good news. You might recall that HTC's profits fell 91% in its Q4. The company needs a hit smartphone, and Samsung's Galaxy S4 is already in the batting cage warming up.
Researchers at Revolve found a hole in EA's Origin that could put its 10 million users at risk. The hole would allow somebody to swap out games for malicious code based on the way Origin handles links. The researchers say there's no evidence that the hole has been exploited in the wild, and EA is looking into this vulnerability.
It was designed that way, right? Other EA news, CEO John Riccitiello will resign from his position on March 30th. In a resignation letter, he acknowledged the company has fallen short of the internal operating plan set in motion 1 year ago, and he took responsibility for the miss. EA issued a warning to investors they would be at the low end or fall short of Q4 earnings forecasts. Former CEO and chairman of the board, Larry Probst, will take over as executive chairman and lead the search for Riccitiello's replacement. The former CEO himself gets the standard 24-month severance pay that we all get when we fail our companies.
Geek.com reports that Google is working to combine its existing communication platforms into one unified service called Babbel. The service will merge Google Talk, Google Plus Messenger, Google Voice, and other chat services used by Google. Babbel will be threaded across existing Google services, pulling messages into one place. I think if it feels more like Facebook Messenger than it does like Apple's iMessage, it's a hit already.
You got trouble right here in Chrome OS City. That's trouble with a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for Pinkie Pie, who submitted a bug with Google showing an unreliable exploit in Chrome OS at Ponium 3. Pinkie Pie will be paid $40,000 for finding this flaw. Google patched these potential problems on March 15th with an update to Chrome.
That's how you do Broadway, Samsung. Right there. I as actor, my friends. Rules of war. They always seem a little odd to have rules for war, but since partisans and terrorists don't follow them, it's important for relations among nation states to have these rules. And now NATO has published a handbook on the rules of cyber war, setting out how international law applies to state-sponsored online attacks. The manual says governments must avoid attacks on civilians, hospitals, nuclear power stations, dams, and dikes. The manual also provides for conventional force responses to the most damaging cyber attacks. The manual is not official NATO policy, however, but it is considered advisory.
A startup founded by former Google engineers called Sift Science has launched a fraud-fighting service to monitor online criminal behavior based on machine learning. Sift Science is primarily targeting online marketplaces, payment networks, e-commerce sites, places where fraud is kind of a big issue. Businesses can integrate Sift Science's technology by copying and pasting a small snippet of JavaScript code into their sites.
The Communications Security Reliability and Interoperability Council, or CSRIC for not even that much shorter, submitted its cybersecurity controls recommendation to the FCC, but it will not include 20 critical security controls like limiting admin privileges, requiring backups, penetration testing, or network access restrictions. The list was supported by the NSA, Department of Defense, and companies like McAfee and Mandiant, but was blocked by the U.S. Telecom Association. Telecoms feared an undue burden could be placed on them if they were forced to follow the security practices.
All right, Gumshoes, it's time to take a look at the crime blotter. After being the victim of a denial-of-service attack, security reporter Brian Krebs did some detective work. He may have been hacked by someone known as Phobia or potentially Team Hype. Team Hype would have an issue with Krebs since Krebs reported that Team Hype stole, then sold Xbox Live gamer tags belonging to Microsoft employees. Phobia is a part of Team Hype. Krebs received Phobia's phone number, called him, and found out that Phobia is a 20-year-old person named Ryan Stevenson. Stevenson is also taking credit for hacking Matt Honan's information as well.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Citrix and ShareFile. Most business emails include some sort of attachment these days. You got some spreadsheets in there, maybe PowerPoint, some other documents, and you need that information to be received. You need to attach it. You need it to get in the right hands, but you also need it to remain confidential, and it doesn't always remain confidential. That's why ShareFile is important to every business. ShareFile by Citrix sends your attachments as secure links. So you can send files of almost any size, which you can't always do with email. You send them with the highest degree of security. And you receive a notification when your files have been opened and by who. ShareFile is easy to use and integrates into any business. Plus, with ShareFile, you can access files from anywhere, your laptop, your tablet, your smartphone. I use ShareFile, recommend it. In fact, it's great around tax time if you're sending a lot of documents to your accountant. You don't want to just send them out on the open web, especially if you're doing business taxes. If you're not using ShareFile yet, you need to sign up for our free trial right now. No credit card required, nothing to lose. You'll see why millions of professionals rely on it every day. Get started today with our special 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and enter TNT. That's ShareFile.com. Type in TNT, and we thank them for their support, and Citrix for their support of Tech News Today. All right, we got some discussion to do around some of these stories today, and joining us to help share some insights is Mr. Ryan Block, not only co-founder of Engadget, but editor emeritus of Engadget, and now back at AOL doing all kinds of crazy stuff. How's it going, Ryan?
It's going well, besides me being sick.
Perfect. I'm sorry to hear you're sick. But and okay. I told you didn't
have. I appreciate
your
sympathy.
You didn't have to still do the show, but I admire your perseverance.
I wouldn't miss it for anything, including being sick.
Apparently, well, let's start talking about the Samsung Watch. You heard the quote in the news fuse, Lee Hung Yee saying, "Yeah, we are preparing products for the future, and the watch is definitely one of them." So they're just throwing it out there. Yeah, we're making a watch. There's a rumor that's been floating around since January that they have something called codename Altius with its own operating system. We don't know if it's a modified Android or something, but it would have music, email. We have that Apple rumor going around that they're making a watch. Samsung had 29% of the global smartphone unit shipments in the fourth quarter, compared with 21% for Apple. They're neck and neck, but the smartphone market is starting to mature. So everybody's wondering what the next big market to take off in is, and Apple needs that market. They need to dominate that market if they want to continue that trend and fight this sort of perception that maybe they're lagging behind. Ryan, why do you think Samsung just comes out and says, oh, yeah, we're definitely making a watch?
Well, a couple of reasons. One is when Apple, you know, does announce the watch, they get to say, oh, hey, we were here first, or, oh, hey, we've been doing this for a while, right? They get to kind of, you know, turn that conversation to their advantage and make it seem a little bit more like they're not just responding to what Apple does, even though they are actually. It's a preemptive response to what Apple does. They probably wouldn't have been working on a watch if no one was talking about Apple doing a watch.
Yeah, I agree with Ayn. I think this makes it seem like Apple's making a watch, but everybody's making a watch because that's the new smartphone, right? So Samsung gets to be the Android version of what Apple's doing instead of Apple having some revolutionary product that that nobody else can replicate.
Yeah, and Samsung saw a bunch of leaks happen with their last phone. So maybe they're just saying, look, we're going to get ahead of this. Screenshots of what looked to be the watch interface have leaked before. And Samsung also introduced that S band at the S4 release. So when I saw that, I'm thinking, okay, they're probably going to do something in this field anyway. And the thing is, watches are nothing new. I mean, LG had a LG smartphone watch thing back in 2009. Nobody wanted it because the battery life was a mess. If they can crack the battery issue, maybe this could be interesting.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's not about making a watch. It's about making a good watch, which is, you know, that's what Apple did with the iPad. It wasn't about making a tablet. There were lots of tablets already. They made a good tablet. They made a tablet everybody decided they wanted. Ryan, do you think watch is something that people really want? How do you make a watch that captures everybody's hype and imagination?
You know, I'm a little bearish on the watch. I have been for a while. I've kind of talked about this publicly a number of times. I think, look, there will be a market, right? There's clearly a use case for being able to control and triage certain data and information coming in to your phone without having to actually pull your phone out, right? Like maybe you want to see a quick preview of your email that comes in, and then you know if you need to actually bring out the phone to, you know, work on that email. So there are a lot of things you can do with a watch. I think, you know, they'll sell many watches, but to me it's an accessory. It's not the next wave of computing. It's not Google Glass, and I'm bearish on Google Glass, to be honest. It's an accessory. The phone is still going to be the primary device that you've got on you at all times. The watch to me feels optional.
Yeah, I think the watch is an accessory. I think that the only way I get excited about this is when I think about, oh, if I went running, I wouldn't have to take my phone. I could have a Nike app on a watch that then syncs back and has all that data, and I don't have to have something in my pocket or even a music player clipped on, maybe Bluetooth headphones. Iaz, you like the watch, though. Aren't you one of the people who's excited about that idea?
Well, yeah, I mean, I like the idea of smart watches in general. I've been interested in that since what spot watches came out a long time ago, or those little Casio data bank things. I always love having technology on my wrist. But I mean, when I'm looking or thinking about this accessory, because it's going to, like Ryan is saying, it's probably going to be tethered to some other device. The thing about Google Glass, which I love, is it's really revolutionary. It's kind of thinking ahead, but it's hard to convince people to put something on their face that they don't want to have all the time. But a wristwatch, people are used to doing, in the past anyway. So I'm thinking maybe they have a little bit easier time explaining, hey, look, you have your S4. We can pair it with NFC or something, or Bluetooth, something very quickly to make these two devices interact. And then maybe they have an actual chance, because Samsung's ecosystem with its devices is getting better. They have that version of DLNA called AllShare. So if they can get the data talking that way, in a way that consumers understand, I think they could have something that could capture the imagination of consumers.
And I do want to acknowledge all of the people in the chat room, many dozens of you, making the S watch, a.k.a. Swatch joke. You all are very funny.
Now you won't get an email about it.
No. Everyone is more funny than the last.
Than the last.
I got an idea. They called it the S watch.
Yeah.
S watch. Ah. Sorry.
There you go. Now it has been acted out for you. HTC. Everybody's looked at the Samsung Galaxy S4 and comparing it to the HTC One. And some people are saying, even Leo was saying, like, you know, I think the One might be the better phone, but we're not going to get it as soon as we were hoping. It's March. Where is it?
Well, HTC in February said, all right, well, the HTC One is our flagship phone. This is a big deal. A lot of, you know, our company's future is riding on this because they have not done well the last couple of quarters. Said it'll be available in March in 80 countries through more than 185 carriers. Big launch. Now saying, well, we've got to push it back. We've got component shortages, something to do with metal casings, camera parts, kind of a mess. It's not just HTC that's saying that, too. Vodafone says HTC notified them of shipment delays. Best Buy released a statement saying, we've got the HTC One pushed back to third week in March. Some markets, possibly April. And sources tell The Wall Street Journal back in 2012 that CEO Peter Chow had told executives, listen, I'll step down if the HTC One doesn't succeed. This is a big deal. HTC executive has been quoted as saying that they're no longer a tier one customer, that the company has had a problem managing its component suppliers. It's changed its order forecast drastically, frequently following last year's unexpected slump in shipments. I don't know. I mean, it doesn't sound good because HTC, there's so much riding on it right now. And I just see the Galaxy S4 coming to market in April. Ryan, when you hear something like this, is it too soon to say HTC is screwed here?
I don't think they're screwed, but they are dealing with a reality here that a lot of phone companies are starting to come to grips with, which is that in a world dominated by Apple and Samsung, everybody else gets the B-list and the C-list parts. Including, like, as mentioned, camera components. It's just impossible to source the best possible camera components. We heard about this back with Palm, right? They were kind of picking up the scraps left behind Apple. They could not get the parts they wanted because Apple bought all of them. They completely owned those supplies. So everybody who, you know, doesn't work for Cupertino or for Samsung now all of a sudden has to build, you know, their phones with crappier parts. And this is a very weird competitive advantage to have because there's no way to break free of it. It's not like you can, you know, throw money at this problem.
And even Samsung can't appear to get their act together enough to give us an actual release date for the Galaxy S4. I mean, that's one of the brilliances of Apple is to be able to manage their supply chain to the point when they make an announcement, they can give you like a spot on release date right there every time practically.
The HTC One, I mean, that piece of hardware got a lot of people excited. And so the thing is, if it's being delayed and it gets like head-to-head against the S4 beats it out to market, that's going to cause a real problem for HTC. I mean, they've been struggling for so long to try to find their place after, I think, their last big hit was maybe the HTC Incredible or the Evo back, you know, this is years ago. So right now, if they don't get their product to market, they're just going to lose out to everybody who can. And the thing is, sometimes people have like money burning a hole in their pocket and they just want to buy a new phone. And if the One isn't out there, then HTC is going to lose out big.
Yeah, this marketplace is essentially just dominated by Samsung and Apple, like Ryan said. And this is almost like a repeat. You could take this story and put in different model numbers and put in the names Nokia or RIM, now BlackBerry, and you've got the same story. It's a consolidating market, and it's going to be difficult for any of these phone makers to crawl their way back.
I'm sort of sitting here thinking like, gosh, I wonder if this is an opportunity missed for Apple, even though we've already talked about the fact that Apple's release cycle is kind of in flux right now and no one's quite sure what's going on or what's going to happen in 2013. It's sort of a weird opportunity for Apple too, that it would be nice if they had something to push for it. If you've got sort of these second tier companies, as they're at least calling themselves now, falling by the wayside or at least not able to keep up. Yeah, somebody's got to come out with a great flagship phone, and it should be soon.
All right, let's see what Google is up to today. Have they retired anything? Resigned anything? What are they doing, IS?
Well, there was some news today that Google's actually allowing third-party developers to access Google Drive to edit in real time. So that's actually news. But yeah, this thing came from Geek.com saying that Google's going to combine all of its chat services under the name Google Babbel, which I really hope is not the name because that's really hard to say. They've got so many services right now: Google Talk, Hangout, Voice, Messenger, Chat for Drive collaboration, Google Talk for G+, and they all function a little different, and they don't really talk to each other. The new service would work with one chat window across all of Google's products. The same features would be available everywhere. So if you wanted to share photos like you did in a chat window, like you would a G+ Messenger, you'd be able to do that. You could start a Hangout from your contacts list or any number of those things. There's no official timeline for this, but the rebranding has been... Geek.com says that they're expecting an announcement at Google I.O. this year. And a big thanks to The Walk 1100 on the TNT Reddit who pointed this out because I saw this story there. Ryan, do you think a move like this by Google, by consolidating all their talk services, would this give SMS a run for its money?
I don't know about SMS. I mean, I think, you know... All of these disparate services coming together under a single brand, it almost kind of doesn't matter. It's really about how it's positioned and, you know, what they do with it in Android. I think that's kind of what it comes down to. you know, I think this just goes to underscore, though, Google's product schizophrenia. I mean, the fact that they have all these kind of disparate, you know, chat clients and services and messaging systems that really don't talk to each other and are in many cases duplicative. They need to get this stuff tighter. So I'm glad that they're doing it, but I don't think that just the mere act of putting them together is going to be enough to solve the messaging competition problem for them.
Jason, you wrote in the chat room once, just a one word once. Is this a service you'd like, apparently?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just as an everyday Android user, and you know, I've certainly bought into a lot of the Google products and messaging options. And yeah, it's very confusing. Like they compete direct with each other, the chat and Google Plus and Talk, and Google Voice is like half hashed out and everything. And that hasn't gotten many updates. If you really want to live in that world, it's incredibly confusing to know exactly how to navigate it. And having some sort of unified kind of inbox for all of these things would be great. But again, Ryan, you make a really good point. I don't know how that, just because they're all in one app doesn't necessarily make the landscape of what they're offering any clearer. It just gets it all into one roof, but it's still very confusing why they have these different services that seem to overlap as much as they do. It doesn't make
a whole lot
of sense.
Well, but if it's all in one place, you have a much higher chance of me using something like Hangout plus Voice plus, you know, Google Talk. I mean, right now I'm using very little communication that's Google branded. I mean, I certainly use GTalk quite a bit, but that's like routed through iMessage. It's very fragmented, to use a term. I think we've seen certain services that started out as chat over data to replace SMS, adding in voice capabilities. It's not necessarily something that you're using constantly, but you know it's there when you need it. So I think this makes sense just organizationally. Mm-hmm.
Tom, do you predict any backlash by anybody to say, oh no, I wanted these things separate?
Maybe I'm alone, but yeah, I'll backlash right now. Google Docs chat, I don't want integrated with GTalk. I only want to talk to the people in the doc. I see no reason for that to be integrated into GTalk. And am I wrong, or is GTalk and Google Plus chat not the same thing? Because I feel like I've seen my Google Plus chat pop up when somebody also is chatting with me in Gmail. I mean, you can argue about whether you like the name Google Babbler or anything or not. The idea of bringing all of their GTalk things under one name is all fine. But my bigger problem is that I have all of these other messenger services, Facebook Messenger, and then there's SMS, and then there's iMessage. And I would like somebody to solve that one platform so that I just have to have one contact list for everything. And this doesn't seem to be a problem that I've been thinking needs to be solved.
Anytime I get an Android device to test out, the first thing I do is I take all the Google services, which are Messenger, Talk, Voice, all these things. I put them in one folder because I need to be able to access all of them. And it would be nice if it was just one app. Also, the icons are very similar. They all look like the same stupid chat bubble, which means I can't find the app I'm looking for. So I'm thinking for Android, this is going to make a lot of sense. And if they can figure out the proper way to do this on the desktop in these threaded conversations, they could have a real advantage over something like iMessage, which works really poorly.
Yeah, and Tom, just to answer your question, yes, you're right. Talk is in both Google Plus and Mail. What I meant to say was Messenger. Just to stay.
Right.
Yeah, sorry about
that. Yeah, that makes sense. On to our other sponsor for today's show, Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create a great online blog, a photo gallery. You get those top-notch designs, award-winning designs that you can personalize and make work for you. And now Squarespace Commerce allows you to provide a store as well. It's a powerful and flexible e-commerce solution integrated to work with every one of those Squarespace templates, allowing you to sell physical and digital goods. Whether you're selling posters and hardback books and CDs, or whether you're selling MP3s and ebooks or just digital art, anything you think of, fast merchant account setup, single interface for order management, and Squarespace Commerce is included with a business plan subscription, which starts at $24 a month when you sign up for a year, or $30 a month for the monthly plan. And Squarespace still gives you the best mobile experience. I mean, one of the things I've been impressed with Squarespace is when I go and I look at swordandlaser.com now that we use the new Squarespace 6 template. And when I look at it on my phone, it looks like it was designed for the phone. When I look at it on the tablet, it looks like it was designed for the tablet. These mobile responsive designs make your site look right no matter what screen people are working on. And you don't have to worry about that. You just make the content. You pick the design that looks right for you. It's an all-in-one platform integrating all your website needs, your domain, your design, development, commerce now. and hosting and 24/7 customer support. So go try it for free. You don't have to give them a credit card or nothing. There's really no risk. There's no reason not to give it a shot. Sign up for a free account. And then if you decide to purchase it, use the offer code TNT3 and get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. That includes monthly and annual plans. And don't forget, with the annual plan, they actually give you a free domain name registration with your annual plan subscription. And once you get that domain name, that's yours. You own that domain name. At squarespace.com, use the offer code TNT3. Everything you need to create an exceptional website. And we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. So we mentioned that John Riccitiello is stepping down March 30th, taking responsibility for falling short of the operating plan at EA. EA also warned investors they'll be at the low end or possibly below previously issued guidance. A lot of people are looking at this and saying, the SimCity launch was the last straw. Maybe that's true. Maybe it's not. I mean, SimCity did sell 1 million copies, but there were disappointing sales of Medal of Honor Warfighter. They failed to ship the NBA simulation game the past 3 years. Star Wars The Old Republic went free to play. It was not the success that they wanted it to be. Mike Hickey, an analyst at National Alliance Capital Markets, said to Reuters that Riccitiello has a track record of misexecutions. Former CEO and chairman of the board, Larry Probst, taken over. Do you think new hardware or new Steam boxes, new PS4, new Xbox, is that going to help here? Is that the problem with the things like EA? And Activision's been having problems, too, with sales. Or is this an EA-specific problem in this case?
I think this is just a shift in gaming in general. I mean, EA was a big player when it came to console games. And then they had the pricing back then was much more expensive. Then they had to get into the mobile space, which they did successfully do. But they're facing a lot more competition when it comes to eyeballs. So, instead of going up against all these major studios, they're going up against individual developers who can make any kind of game for any kind of platform. So if new hardware did exist, if anything, it might spur EA to develop more lower-cost games with more in-app purchases, that kind of system. But I'm not really sure if hardware is going to be their solution. But as long as these major consoles are out there that have that closed platform, like a PS4, like an Xbox 360, I think EA is safe for a little bit.
Ryan, what do you think? Is the landscape shifted to mobile enough that this is danger for companies like EA?
I think we're in this very weird intermediate state right now where I don't think that we're going to shift all the way to mobile, but I don't really think that the old models of the games business are adaptable. In today's really ridiculously competitive space for people's attention. I don't think that EA is competing against mobile. I think that EA is just competing for attention, which I think is something that IS said. This is just a weird moment, right? Like, you can't just go out and invest $80, $90, $100 million in a game anymore and expect that it's always going to sell, be a $500 million blockbuster franchise. So I think that companies like EA have to adapt to this and figure out how to create leaner games. Not necessarily, less rich games, but do it in a way that, is not Hollywood blockbuster budget.
In a sense, it's the same lesson that the music industry and the movie industry has learned or is in the process of learning. Maybe they may not have learned it entirely, which is what you say exactly. You're competing for attention now. You're not just in that same old business. Sarah, what do you think EA's way forward could be?
Well, I don't think I can say anything that hasn't really been said. I think that, yes, the landscape is shifting. It's a good comparison to make to something like the music industry, because the music industry there are still these licenses and agreements where the license holders and the big music companies can still get a lot of money out of people who are trying to innovate in the space. As far as games go, yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of competition. I don't necessarily think, and this is coming from someone who just doesn't play a lot of games in general. I mean, I play an iPad game here and there, but mobile isn't necessarily the only future of gaming. Clearly, it's just there's more of that. And so a company like EA, they have to change their business strategy. And that's probably not going to happen overnight. There's going to be some probably dark days before they figure out what makes sense. And if they can't figure it out, then, well, there are other companies that will become the next big dogs.
Yeah, well, it's a really good point, is that in a way, the cycle of the market masks what could be an underlying issue, right? I mean, it is one of those situations where we are in a gap between hardware. So you're not going to see as many sales. And you're right that, non-mobile sales are not dead, But if a company like EA has even harder underlying or more significant underlying problems, you might not be able to tell given the current market. And so maybe this is just a good thing that Richetello is saying, forget it, you know, I'm out of here. Let's give it a new start. And hopefully they find somebody that can lead them back through and give us good games. Give, you know, deliver on some good stuff. That's all we want as game players. Meanwhile, Facebook and developers starting to have a little Twitter-like relationship, it sounds like.
Yeah, you know, well, the Wall Street Journal had an interesting story about an app called Vintage Camera that had gotten blocked from Facebook. Facebook apparently had told the developer, Antoine Morcos, too many users had basically marked Vintage Camera as spam. They complained and they said, you know, it's basically not providing enough service for our users. He said he appealed. He said, my app fields less than 3 complaints for every 1,000 photos that are shared. Vintage Camera is somewhat similar to Instagram. It's kind of a filter type of a service. Facebook said, no. Users were sharing as much as 6,000 photos per day on Facebook. Now access is blocked. That's coming from the developer. Now, of course, Facebook, this is Vintage Camera is not the first app to get the axe. We've had Voxer being blocked, Vine being blocked, an app called Message Me back last Friday can no longer pull from Facebook's friends list. And there's a little bit of a, you know, there are some sources that say, well, Facebook was possibly interested in acquiring Message Me and Message Me wasn't interested. So what's this really about? What I think is interesting is Facebook's got this internal system. It's called Stripe. That's designed to monitor third-party apps. So if posts are published by apps and too many users report that app as spam, Facebook says, well, we don't want to make people mad, so we're going to go ahead and restrict distribution of the app. Now, I have marked apps as spam a handful of times because I don't really want to see them anymore because maybe they're too frequent, but they're not necessarily spam. I think that's a real issue that Facebook has on its feed right now. I mean, spam to me is something different than, oh, here is an app that I would just like to see less frequently. So it's not necessarily the developer's fault. You know, they're providing a service that works for some people, maybe just not everybody. And if Marcos, who makes a Vintage Camera, is right in saying, I'm not sure where he's getting his metrics, but he's saying 3 complaints for every 1,000 photos shared and his app gets yanked, is that really fair? Now, of course, there are some developers that also say Facebook wants to cut off our access in general so that we pay for better distribution. That's the model that Facebook's looking for down the road. And they're just using, oh, you're too spammy as an excuse. Ayaz, do you mark stuff as spam? Does it feel like spam? Does Facebook have an issue here?
I don't think I'm on Facebook enough to even mark anything as spam. I think that's part of the thing about Facebook is that I used to see all those old game invites and things, and I blocked all of those. So now I hardly see anything like that on my news feed. When it comes to these apps, I mean, this particular app is a little bit suspect. I mean, it's Vintage Camera, right? And you've got Facebook's Instagram out there. It just seems like it's a good story, the fact that this is a competing product out there, but I'm not really sure what exactly is going on between Facebook and the developers. Obviously, Facebook wants to be the internet for everybody, and the thing is, if they can charge developers to have their apps on there, they will. I mean, they're looking for any revenue stream they can get. So I'm probably the wrong guy to ask if I'm seeing things like that on Facebook, considering I'm there like maybe once every 3 weeks.
Now, Ryan, as I recall, you are not a Facebook user currently, correct?
I'm not. That's correct. Yeah.
Does it give you pause that possibly Instagram, which is a Facebook property, might be getting marked as spam somewhat regularly as well, and that third party apps are being treated unfairly? Does that surprise you?
Well, I mean, we don't know that Instagram is being marked as spam as frequently as some of these other products. You know, there's some speculation that happens there, but there's really nothing about the story that to me doesn't make sense, or that, you know, if I were, you know, running the strategy for Facebook, I would do differently. I mean, this all sounds actually very reasonable. I know that might, you know, be a little frustrating to hear sometimes, but, you know, Facebook's job is to make sure that users want to continue using Facebook. And if users are communicating to Facebook that certain apps are, you know, not a good experience, you know, clogging up their news feeds, whatever, then it's really the onus is on Facebook to take action there. If Facebook doesn't police this stuff, then who will? So, you know, the reality here is I know, you know, I've had experience in building communities online and maintaining them, and it's not easy, and you have to police this stuff. So I get it. Now, are they doing anything nefarious? Well, that's where things get a little bit tricky, and we don't necessarily know that they are or they are not. But, you know, at a very high level, I think the principles here do make sense.
All right, let's finish up with a little news about ABC and the fact that we've been waiting for a long time to see if anybody will go and just stream their programming online. And it looks like, in a way, ABC may be one of the first big names to do that, Ayaz.
Yeah, the New York Times is reporting that ABC is working on an app for live streaming shows to mobile devices. Now, the app could become available later this year. Now, ABC would be the first American broadcaster to provide a live stream of national and local programming. And so you're probably thinking, so since ABC broadcasts over the air for free, anyone can use the app, right? No, that's not the case. The Times is saying that the app would stream ABC programming to phones and tablets of cable and satellite subscribers. Now, this app is called Watch ABC. It was first mentioned in a quick release, a little throwaway line, 9 months ago. Ryan, on one hand, it's a broadcast network pushing forward, so that's pretty cool. On the other hand, it requires authentication. What do you think of this move?
I think they're probably doing it because they want to know something about their users. They want to know who's watching it. And, you know, they're probably doing it, you know, to be able to better target advertising. But I think, you know, the opportunity is much bigger than just, you know, registered cable satellite users, and throwing up that barrier seems a little short-sighted to me.
I think with Nielsen allowing the ratings of online to now be, you know, rolled into the ratings of broadcast and cable, and ABC being the first of the big networks to say, we're going to sell to that. We're actually going to sell a unified ad platform across ABC. So if you buy an ad and it shows up on broadcast, it'll show up online as well. This makes perfect sense for them to roll that right along and say, well, you know, and right to your point, Ryan, let's find out. Because we have the safety of being able to sell the same ads across this, let's find out how many people actually do use this online and how many people will take advantage of this. So it's a big step, and I think it's the kind of step that is enabled, not technically, of course, but for the fearful broadcast networks to be able to take, because Nielsen is out there saying, we'll back this with some ratings data that then you can go and sell.
Sarah, do you think other networks are going to follow ABC's lead, or are they just going to drag their feet kicking and screaming before they will allow live streaming on their apps?
Well, you know, Ryan said this is probably a really great way to learn a little bit more about their customers, ABC's customers, and I totally agree. I watch ABC over the air with an antenna for free. It's HD. It's actually a better HD than what my cable provider would be able to provide me. So this doesn't help me. I'm not going to be able to watch anything if it needs some sort of cable authentication because I just don't have one. So I don't think they're going to pick up more viewers necessarily, but they can certainly learn a little bit more about the people who do subscribe to cable packages and are watching ABC regularly. And if the word gets out that ABC can somehow monetize that or, I don't know, run their business better, sure. I think the other networks would be happy to do this. And it's all about kind of the evolution of who's watching and when and how.
Brian, do you think there's anything in the culture of Disney and ABC about how tech forward they are? I mean, the ABC app on iPad was pretty powerful, one of the first ones that had tons of network video on there. They've also been on iTunes first. Is there just some kind of something going on there that's just like, look, we got to get into this first?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you know, they have always had a very tight relationship with Apple because of, you know, the Pixar Steve Jobs crossover. So, you know, it's not a bad thing that Bob Iger and the Disney people, you know, have incorporated, tech into that DNA. I think as that trickles down to ABC though, it gets a little tricky, right? Because they do have to wind up competing at some certain level with their local affiliates. And that's, you know, ABC's business model. It's kind of like a franchise model, right? They work with local affiliates, who carry the network. And then add local programming on top of that. And if those local affiliates are not happy with the direction that ABC is taking things, they've got a real situation on their hands. So I think maybe another part of the reason why they're not just making it free and open is because, you know, they can get around some of these issues with the affiliates if they're only making it accessible to users who have registered on cable or satellite.
I think it was News Corp's Fox that actually did something strange where they had their over-the-air broadcast stuff would be available 8 days after they aired for free, or if you authenticated with a Dish subscriber credentials or some other credentials, you'd be able to access it immediately, which also seems strange. It just seems like these networks are trying to keep all the cable systems happy, trying to make sure everybody thinks that they're not leaving the cable networks, or the cable stations, that is. What they are doing is that they're trying to supplement that. And I think it's a good start. I'm hoping that eventually this will start breaking down and say, look, this is just a different distribution medium.
All right, let's move on to the randomizer. Reddit has a series or of posts that have been going on for a long time called Explain Like I'm Five, to like try to make things simple. And now they've turned it into a YouTube video series called Explain Like I'm Five, where they have two people with a group of five-year-olds, and they explain things like existentialism, stock market volatility, the war in Syria, to a group of five-year-olds. It's always fun to have kids misunderstanding complex topics. What do you guys think of this? Is you gonna watch?
I think I'll watch just to get informed. I mean,
sometimes we need this ourselves.
Sometimes my mental bandwidth has just exceeded. Yeah, so I'm just like, right. I need something simple. And so, like, when I saw this story that Reddit's actually getting into original content, I thought that was intriguing. But what they're doing is something that would appeal to the masses. So you don't feel, it's not like with those shows where they make fun of adults for being stupid. They're like, these are children. So if the children get it, you could get it, right?
Yeah, this is, you know, it's not really marketed towards kids. I guess if you think kids are cute, that's just a bonus, right?
Right. No, this is not meant for kids. This is meant for adults. It's and there's some funny parts, and they actually do a pretty good job of explaining this. Although on one of the YouTube posts, the one about the war in Syria, they're already taking all kinds of flack from both sides for spreading propaganda, which is always when you lightheartedly take on serious topics, you're always going to get the people who don't think they're funny to come after you. But I think this is fun. I don't think they're actually explaining these like people are five. I don't think the five-year-olds are quite getting the concepts from what I could tell. But
maybe when they're six, they'll get it. Like you were five.
When you're older. Mm-hmm. Explain it like a six-year-old. Totally different. This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Pond5, the world's stock media marketplace. I know many of you in the audience are media makers, and you guys put together your own websites, your own videos, your own films, your own blogs, and it's dangerous to just go and take stuff off the internet. You might get a takedown notice. You might get a cease and desist. You might get worse. So go get some stock media that you don't have to worry about, and you don't have to pay an arm and a leg for it. You're like, I'm not made of money, Merritt. Well, you don't have to be. You get reasonable prices. You pay once and then you can use it in almost any project and you don't have to worry about it anymore. Extend your creativity with photos, vector illustrations, music tracks, sound effects, motion graphic templates that you can customize, 3D models, and more. The collection is growing all the time because it's also an artist marketplace. If you're the kind of person who makes this sort of stuff, you can sell your stock media. You set the price. You get 50% royalties for each and every sale. And as a result, the prices are unbeatable. The range and quality of the content available is unbeatable. If you're a media maker or artist, check out Pond5, P-O-N-D, the number 5.com, and take your creativity to the next level. They've got a special offer this month. You can get 50 free stock media files at pond5.com/TNT. Go there and check it out. Download those 50 free stock media files. See what you get. Pond5.com/TNT. I think you'll like what you see. And we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. What's in the calendar, Sarah?
Oh, Tom, I'm glad you asked. Microsoft is pushing the Windows 7 Service Pack 1 to users today, March 19th. Tomorrow, Oracle has its earnings report. Who's waiting with bated breath for that? Well, people are. Also tomorrow, running through Wednesday, is GigaOm Structured Data Conference. That's happening in New York City. And T-Mobile is planning a March 26th event, says that big changes are a-coming.
LTE. They're going to launch LTE.
No, that girl's going to stop wearing the pink dress.
Which she already did.
Well, she's got pink piping on her leather motorcycle suit, so maybe the pink just goes away entirely. Who knows?
Maybe. One can dream.
Right.
One can dream.
Wait, is it anything else but LTE, Ryan? That's what it's going to be.
Well, they still have a spectrum problem. They still have to get over this AWS 700 megahertz spectrum. So, yeah, if it's LTE, that's great, but that doesn't fix all their problems.
Right.
Their problems are interoperability and getting the best phones on their network, and that's going to continue to be an issue, LTE or not.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe they're going to unleash a bunch of new phones. Maybe they get the iPhone.
Well, they have that subsidization thing that they're changing up. That might be the official announcement.
Oh, right. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Got an email from Josh. He said, I was watching episode 712, and Tom stated it would be possible to print an entire gun. This would be impossible. It would be possible to print parts for a gun, and maybe even the ammo, but there is one problem with printing a gun. The barrel. A barrel is a special type of steel. If the barrel is too hard, the minute the charge is detonated, the barrel would explode. If it's too malleable, the barrel will expand too much and allow too much gas to pass between the bullet and the barrel. Any 3D printing technology will have to deposit bits of metal, then fuse them together. This would be similar to cast steel, as the grain of the steel would be very inconsistent. This would make the barrel fairly brittle, which would be very bad, as it could lead to barrel explosion. The only way to get steel to have a consistent grain and not be too soft or too hard is through a complex procedure of heating and cooling, not to mention that any 3D printing technology would likely not match the accuracy of a good lathe. I think he means lathe here. This would cause the gun to be very inaccurate. It's also a bit ignorant to act like 3D printers will now allow criminals to make their own guns. All one really needs to make a gun is a lathe to make the barrel and a small foundry to cast the metal parts. The reason criminals don't do this is the same reason that criminals will not start making 3D guns. It is easier to steal a gun than it is to build one.
All right, thanks for the email, Josh. You guys can email us, TNT at twit.tv. And that wraps it up for us. Ryan, I'm sorry you're not feeling well, man, but always good to have you on the show. Thanks for sharing your insights with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And folks can still find you at GDGT.com, follow you at Ryan on Twitter, and of course at Engadget.com as well. Anything else you got going on you want to let folks know about?
No, that's about it. That's a lot of sites and places, so I'll try to keep it simple.
All right. Thanks again, man. And thank you guys for watching or listening. You can submit stories in our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. Let us know what you think we should cover. We look at that every day along with all of our other news sources to kind of weigh in, like, oh, okay, they seem to be very interested in that story. Put it in the lineup for you, technewstoday.reddit.com. It's like close to 15,000 people in there. So join them. Vote stuff up. Vote stuff down. You can also find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT, any time of day. 24/7. We're there for you, waiting with over 700 episodes for you to enjoy. You can email us, TNT at twit.tv, and give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW. Engadget's Nicole Lee joins us tomorrow. We'll see you then.